by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make the heaven a bit.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got a lot going this week. Seems like the Portland thing is settling down a little bit. This first clip is an interview with Eric Metastas of John Solomon on his latest book, Fallout. Now, this book covers a lot of scandals that occurred during the Obama administration and involves Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton to a great extent. So here we go with this excellent interview.
Okay, folks, John Solomon is someone many of us have admired and enjoyed on TV, talking about what's been happening in the news for a number of years. Fallout is the brand new book. The title is Fallout, Nuclear Bribes, Russian Spies, and the Washington Lies That Enriched the Clinton and Biden Dynasties. He co-wrote it with Seamus Bruner. John Solomon, it's a privilege to have you. Thanks for being on.
It's great to be with you, Eric, and congratulations on the success of your great show.
Well, you're very kind. You also, by the way, are the founder of JustTheNews.com, which is a tremendous news site. I want people to know that they have various news sources that they can go to, JustTheNews.com. But this book, I've heard you talking mostly on Sean Hannity and some other programs about Russia and the corruption in our government. You know, John, seriously, most people would prefer to believe that this is not true. It's too horrifying to consider. But I eventually came to see that there's no way around it. The facts will come out. You've been promising that for a long time. And exactly what you said has happened. We now have the memos. We now have the documents. So tell us in the book Fallout, when you call it Fallout, why do you say Fallout? Because there's so much in it. But why did you pick that title?
Well, it has a lot of different meanings, but I think the most important meaning is that the whole reason we ended up with the Russia and Ukraine scandals that, you know, harmed or slowed down the Trump administration in their first term was that there was fallout from a failed foreign policy called the Russia reboot. In fact, it may be the largest foreign policy failure in the last 50 years. In 2009, the Obama-Biden-Clinton team decided they were going to reboot relations with Vladimir Putin. And unlike the peace through strength approach that Reagan and now Trump takes, they were going to do a giveaway approach, an appeasement approach. And that is, we'll give Vladimir Putin everything he needs to prop up his economy, his military, his technology sector, and then he'll become our good buddy. And that's what they did from 2009 to 2013. They gave away billions of dollars of nuclear fuel contracts that made American utilities and electricity customers dependent on Vladimir Putin's uranium for years to come. We gave them 20% of the uranium ore under our soil in the deal known as the Uranium One deal. And Hillary Clinton flew over with a bunch of Silicon Valley types and helped Moscow set up its own Silicon Valley called Skokovo, which, by the way, today has become a military espionage outpost harming American interests, according to the U.S. intelligence community. After we gave all that to Barack Obama in 2014, I'm sorry, after Barack Obama gave all that to Vladimir Putin, in 2014, Russia invaded the Crimean region of Ukraine and pulled the rug out from under Obama and Biden and Clinton. Policy failed miserably. And then Joe Biden has to go to Ukraine, prop it up. That gives us the Hunter Biden scandal and then the Ukraine impeachment scandal. And by the time 2016 rolls around, Hillary Clinton sees this Russia thing, the fact that they had a failed foreign policy and had cashed in on it. Many Democrats were making money off the Russians during the reboot. She has to cover it up. And so that's what the Christopher Steele dossier and the opposition research project that went to the FBI was about.
I've not heard That to me is maybe the most striking or at least surprising part of your thesis. In other words,
right.
I've been following a lot of this, but you're saying it was specifically Hillary Clinton's need in the last election to cover up the corruption as a result of the Obama, Biden, Clinton policies, and that that's why they went all in on gaslighting the American public with this, yeah. with this Russia, Ukraine, well, with the Russia hoax. Let me just ask you, let me play stupid devil's advocate for a minute here.
Sure.
If I were president in 2009 or Secretary of State, I might have thought, look, let's be honest, we're no longer dealing with the Soviet Union. Putin, you know, he's no George Washington, but neither is he Stalin. And we may be able to bring him into the, you know, community of nations in a way that we haven't done before. So it doesn't strike me as inherently foolish that they were willing to try that.
Inside, in 2009 and 2010, Doug Campbell is reporting in real time that Vladimir Putin is trying to create a uranium monopoly in the United States and elsewhere so he can have geopolitical leverage over the Americans and use it as a weapon as he used natural gas in Eastern Europe. That's going to the FBI in real time. He's reporting that Rosatom has compromised the national security of the United States by compromising the main uranium trucking company in America. He's reporting that the Rosatom, Vladimir Putin's company, is engaged in kickbacks, bribery, money laundering. He's reporting in real time and providing the evidence that Rosatom and Russia are illegally helping Iran in its illicit nuclear weapons program. So all these things are getting briefed. How do we know that? There's a declassified letter that was sent to the Senate in December 2017 that we got a hold of for this book. In that letter, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission divulges that the FBI informed all primary levels of government, all the senior leadership of the Obama administration in August of 2010 that these things were going on with Rosatom, that they had a major problem. That means before Uranium One was approved as a sale, before the nuclear contracts were approved, before Skokovo was built up with American know-how, the Obama administration had a really, really big red flag.
Okay, now, there's always irony, right? It's funny when the left has accused Trump of not necessarily listening to our intelligence. Here you have an example, it seems to me, of Obama and his Secretary of State not listening to the intelligence. Why do you, John Solomon, suppose that the Obama administration kicked this information to the side, said we don't care? What do you suppose was going on? Because this is rather dramatic what you're sharing.
It's pretty clear from the interviews we did. We did over 100 interviews for this book and went through over 10,000 pages of documents that Barack Obama was driven to get the Iran nuclear deal. And he could not have an Iran nuclear deal if Russia would meddle with it. And so he needed Russia. And turning that willful blind eye to what was really significant criminal activity, significant national security risk activity, was done specifically because they didn't want to mess with the Iran deal. It was all about Iran.
Okay, so let's hang on. We're going to be right back. I love it when I get clarity. We'll be right back with John Solomon. Folks, I'm talking to John Solomon. He's with justthenews.com. The brand new book is called Fallout, Nuclear Bribes, Russian Spies, and the Washington Lies That Enriched the Clinton and Biden Dynasties, co-written with Seamus Bruner. John, what you've just told us, I love it when I get clarity, because a lot of times you listen to news and it's a real echo chamber and everybody knows what they're talking about and they don't explain things. You've just explained to us that the reason that Obama and Hillary Clinton turned a blind eye to Russian malfeasance from the FBI, which is very clear and very disturbing, was that Obama felt, you might suppose, for his legacy, so that he could, you know, earn the Nobel Prize that he had been given some years ago, that he needed a big Iran deal. Now, that seems far more foolish to me than playing patty cake with Putin, but he really wanted the Iran deal, and he understood, as you said, that he needed not to upset Putin. So they decided to look the other way. So play this out for us. In other words, what does that mean? If you look the other way when you know that Putin is using you. Did Putin realize this? Did Putin understand that he has leverage because of Iran?
He understood he had leverage with Iran, and he also understood if you could make American codependent on its uranium, Moscow's cheaper uranium, that he could put the American uranium mining business out of business and have geopolitical leverage over the United States. Think about it. If we got into a real confrontation with Russia, Russia could stop supplying our nuclear power plants with nuclear fuel, and we would be in a world of hurt because we don't have mines operating very much in the United States right now with uranium, and there's only so much that we can get from Canada and Europe and Asia. And so and not only is that Putin's strategy because he wrote it in a document that the FBI informant provided to the FBI, it was briefed to the Obama administration. So they were playing into Vladimir Putin's hands. And I think when you look back at this time, Barack Obama had a very simple foreign policy. This is a guy, Obama loved domestic policy. He acknowledges that was his sweet spot. And when once asked, what is your foreign policy doctrine? He said, just don't do stupid things. Actually, he used a little more colorful term, but we won't use that today. But the fact of the matter is that Russia reboot, when you look at it, was a series of stupid decisions, decisions that backfired on the American people. And that's what Hillary Clinton is facing in 2016 when she goes into the election. It was a senior Clinton campaign official who told me we needed to neutralize this issue because we saw it as our number one liability. And then Seamus Bruner, my co-author, digs out a document that was in our files that we hadn't really understood the significance of all of a sudden. It's a poll from the summer of 2015. Hillary Clinton polls Americans secretly to find out what's her number one political liability. Is it Vince Foster? Is it Whitewater? Is it the Rose Law Firm billing records? Is it Benghazi and the tragedy there? Is it the email, classified email scandal that she was going through right in 2015? None of those registered as the number one impediment to the presidency for her. The number one impediment was the perception that she and her husband, Bill Clinton, cashed in along with other Democrats on the failed Russian policy. 53% of the people in this private poll that the Clinton campaign did said that was the number one reason why they might not vote for Hillary Clinton. So that's why they hire Christopher Steele and Fusion GPS. It's why they carry out the dirty trick that we now know to be Russia collusion.
Okay, now this is big. When I hear something like this, I've never quite heard it the way you just put it. Again, a lot of times I think on news programs, people talk past each other and everybody is so in the know that they don't clarify. I don't think most Americans know what you just said, and I can't say that I really understood this. So you are, in fact, telling me that we now have proof that in 2015, as Hillary Clinton goes for the presidency, she's sure she's going to get it, by the way. We know that.
That's right.
She says, if this is my most vulnerable issue, I am going to go all in and do anything I can to neutralize that issue. But you're telling me, John, that people – from her campaign told this to you?
They did. In fact, we didn't find the poll until we got that guidance from a very senior Clinton campaign official who was read into the entire strategy involved in it. Here's something really interesting. We finished the book, we wrap it, it's out on the press, it's about to come out on July 14th, and then all of a sudden, there's a ruling in Great Britain 2 weeks ago. A British judge rules that Christopher Steele is liable under some of the British data laws. He besmirched the reputation of two Russians in the dossier, and he must pay them damages. And in that ruling, there's a blockbuster revelation. In Steele's own testimony, he says he was told Hillary Clinton was read into his operation, and he told the FBI on the very first time he drops off parts of the dossier that Hillary Clinton is his ultimate client. That means he thought Hillary Clinton was being read into what he was doing because it was that important to her. A lot of issues in the campaign. You don't distract the candidate unless it's very important. He says he was told she was read into it, and he tells the FBI, she's my ultimate client. Now, the FBI hides that from the FISA Court, the Congress, and the American people for a long time, but that's how important this was. Christopher Steele was told Hillary Clinton was monitoring his work. That's a pretty big deal if you're inside a campaign.
This is so unbelievable. Forgive me just for pausing in horror that this happened in this way, because look, you and Sarah Carter and Sean Hannity have been talking about this for a number of years now, but to finally know, to have these pieces of information. Now, why, you know, speaking as a novice and a non-journalist, why would somebody from the Clinton campaign tell you this?
Well, listen, I've been in this town 30, 35 years, and I developed sources all over the map, Democrats, independents, foreign leaders, Republicans, conservatives. And so I talk to everyone before I do a story. I get painted today as a conservative, but the fact of the matter is I'm the same reporter I was at the Associated Press back in the 1980s when I started doing investigative reporting. I just go after the truth. And what I saw in 2017 was a false narrative being crafted. And I was told that. I came home one night after a TV appearance. I pulled into my driveway. I think it was March of 2017, if I remember correctly. And it's 11 o'clock at night. I'm pulling in. I'm exhausted after a long day. And there's a blue car with government license plates and its parking lights sitting out in front of my mailbox. I pull in the driveway. Two guys get out of the car. And they say, "Are you Mr. Solomon?" I said, "Yes." And "How can I help you?" And they said, "Listen, we work inside the intelligence community. We can't tell you much. But the story you just reported, and I just worked on a story about FISA abuses that the FISA court had publicly released, scores of violations that the Obama administration did throughout its administration that it had failed to disclose until the last minute. It's a good story. It's important. New York Times, other people are picking up on it. And they said, "That story you broke today is the tip of a very large iceberg." Iceberg. I thought it was just a violation story. "No, sir. There's a political dirty trick going on using the most awesome tools that the U.S. government has." And I said, "Well, why come to me? Why are you coming forth?" And they said, "Listen, you ask us to use these tools, FISA and monitoring and surveillance and the NSA database, to keep you and the rest of America safe from terrorists, from counterintelligence threats. And if we lose these tools because of this political dirty trip," they also called it a political opposition research project, which in retrospect was so brilliant. I didn't know. Remember, this time we didn't know about Christopher Steele. We know about any of this stuff. "If we lose these tools," they said, "though, you won't be safe at night. I won't be safe at night. And that's not how we want to live." They never gave me their name. They never came back. But they were true whistleblowers. And that moment cemented Sarah, Carter, and I to committed that we were going to go find out what the heck were they talking about. Was it a dirty trick? Were they faking us? We didn't know. But I look back at that moment now and how specific and precise those men were. They didn't give me any of the classified stuff. They just simply gave me a very top-level reading. And from that, 3 years later, we've been able to unravel it. And quite frankly, it's much worse than I thought when we got started. It may be the largest spy scandal in American history.
Oh, it has to be, based on even only what I know from it. It's truly horrifying. It's a level of corruption that could destroy the United States as we know it. We've never faced anything quite like this. Let me ask you, what do you suppose is going to happen? I hear people speculating on this almost nightly. This is so bad. Do you suppose that anyone will pay a price for this? I mean, it's one thing not to be elected, as Hillary was not, but this strikes at the very core, at the very root, I should say, of the democratic process, of we the people. Surely some of the people who were in on this have to pay some kind of price.
Without a doubt. And, we forget there has been some price paid, right? Pete Strzok, Andy McKay were fired just before they could get their pensions. James Comey rightfully was ceremoniously ended his FBI tenure, one of the shortest FBI tenures in history at 2 years. But the real ultimate question, the final question that we leave unanswered in the book, because we don't know what's going to happen, is will there be criminal charges against the people who clearly engaged in a conspiracy to defraud the FISA court, the Congress, and the American people? And the good news is, since we wrapped the book, I've been doing a lot of reporting, and there is significant ongoing activity by John Durham, by Jeff Jensen, some of the other independent prosecutors have been named to look at this, that is consistent with building a criminal case, an indictment or a plea deal. Documents are being gathered. Witnesses are being interviewed. Cooperation deals are being discussed. All of that is the normal prelude to some sort of criminal charges. And most of the people I talk to, by the way, not Durham, because he's not leaking at all like Comey, McCabe, FBI, he's been tight-lipped. But people who are witnesses and cooperating say they think something will happen on or around Labor Day, just before, just after Labor Day. That's consistent with Attorney General Bill Barr, who is in the know, who said end of summer, September 21st.
I'm not so sure that this Barr investigation, they say they keep hoping, and I think Son Solomon is a good source, that something will be coming out by the end of this summer around Labor Day. I'm not so sure about that. But coming up is a small clip of what Jerry Nadler had to say about Antifa. And then I'm going to follow that with what Alex expounded on about that. He went out a little further. So here we go with a small clip of what Nadler said about calling Antifa a myth. Here we go now.
Don't forget, last week, Biden accusing the federal law enforcement of, quote, egregious tactics. Our law enforcement said they were responsible for attacking peaceful protesters. That's not at all what happened. Jerry Nadler, he might have outdone the ever-confused Biden, gone a step further, calling violence in places like Portland a myth. Everything we've been showing you, don't believe your own eyes. Believe this psycho.
There's violence across the whole country. Do you disavow the violence from Antifa that's happening in Portland right now?
That's a myth that's being spread only in Washington, D.C.
About Antifa in Portland?
Yes.
Sure, there's videos everywhere online. There's fires and riots. They're throwing fireworks at federal officers. DHS is there. Look online. It gets crazy, Mr. Nadler.
Okay, we got the congenital liar, Schiff, and Nadler. Two of the biggest liars. They're telling you none of this is real. That's a lie. Is he that delusional, that much in denial, that much disconnected from reality? No, I think it's all about an election.
That's what Sean Hannity had to say about it. Coming up is Alex started his show, his daily show, mentioning here's what Alex had to say about this Nadler, Jerry Nadler statement. When the public can see such obviously delusional people like Nadler with an opinion that's not even close to the truth, don't vote for the Democrats. Vote for Trump. I know Trump is outlandish at times, but he's not outlandish and disconnected as Jerry Nadler is. So here we go with what Alex was saying about it.
So here he is telling you there's no violence. Antifa's not bad. They didn't attack our truck with hammers. They didn't go up and shoot people in the head this weekend. They didn't burn anything down. They're angels. In fact, he says it's a myth.
You disavow the violence from Antifa that's happening in Portland right now?
That's a myth that's being spread only in Washington, D.C.
About Antifa in Portland?
Yes.
They're building all this up to drive Trump from power. Now the Democrats in Atlantic Monthly, the New York Times admit that if Trump doesn't step down, we'll burn everything. Just like the Bernie supporters got caught on tape saying. But you're not supposed to know it till they fully activate it. They want to get the police used to standing down so that when they have their real operatives come out and burn stuff, it will create the illusion that America's collapsed and people will capitulate to them. And then we're inside the communist nightmare. We're inside the Bolshevik nightmare 2.0.
The first duty of government is to protect the safety of our citizens. That's what Attorney General Barr said when he was here at the White House just a few days ago. For 55 days in Portland, Oregon, we've seen lawlessness, anarchy, and destruction that threatens peace in our streets and the safety of our fellow American citizens and the safety of our brave law enforcement officers. Yet some Democrats and some in the media continue to ignore reality.
Call it like it is. A specter is haunting the United States. It's nothing less than a radical communist political conspiracy. What we are seeing across the United States is funded in large part by corporations engaging in Chinese slave labor and the notorious unchallenged usurpation strategy of George Soros. And like the sublime perfect masters of old, Soros will take nothing less than the collapse of the United States at any cost.
President Trump is a con man and the ultimate narcissist who wants the world to revolve around him.
Soros' network is massive, where a league of outlaws, fueled by an endless stream of funding, Marxist ideology, and peer pressure, answer to centralized radical left organizations that in turn receive public support from communist-leaning Democratic leaders and Mockingbird media, all tied into Soros' grand strategy.
Put us on a thing of syrup and your mama. Miss Butterworth, that's Saturday.
Portland, Oregon is ground zero, and its liberal mayor, Ted Wheeler, found out firsthand that his civil rights rhetoric is useless against the Marxist maelstrom.
This is an egregious overreaction on the part of the federal officers.
The strategic tactical attack on the federal building in downtown Portland puts President Trump in a damned if he does, damned if he doesn't situation, while Democrats loyal to the United States Strong Cities Network annihilate the truth to fit their propaganda of subversion.
The president has been on a campaign now for some time against Democratic mayors across the country, whether it's me, whether it's Keisha Lance Bottoms in Atlanta, whether it's Muriel Bowser in Washington, D.C., whether it's Jenny Durkin in Seattle. You see a common theme here?
And our justice system is equally compromised. As Bloomberg reported, Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner said in a statement, anyone including federal law enforcement who unlawfully assaults and kidnaps people will face criminal charges from my office. This network of Marxist cultural revolutionaries, which is roughly 90% white, has fully exposed itself. It has hijacked a civil rights movement to engage in full-blown sedition.
Men will recognize that out of one blood, God made all men well upon the face of the earth. Let us be dissatisfied until that day when nobody will shout white power, when nobody will shout black power, but everybody will talk about God's power and human power.
Would Martin Luther King's movement of nonviolence continue to march as innocent Americans died in its wake, as American small businesses were torched by MLK's followers? We all know the answer to that. It's an obvious, resounding no.
Every summer, we are going to have this kind of vigorous protest. My hope is that it will be nonviolent. I would hope that we can avoid riots because riots are self-defeating and socially destructive.
John Bound reporting.
Just to expand on Nadler a little bit and describe the kangaroo inquisition interrogation, you know, hearing that he carried out, that he was chairman of. This was just a haranguing and a cross-examination of William Barr, our attorney general. And he started off by calling him Mr. Barr, you know. And then every Democrat wouldn't let him speak or answer the questions they posed to him. Almost every one. And they just ran roughshod over him. And this showed, this backfired on him. This showed that they are full of political correctness and they don't give a damn at all about free speech, whether they're in or out of Congress or anywhere else. But anyway, this is what Jim Jordan had to say with a panel discussion on Fox and Friends.
For months you've tried to get the Attorney General to come. He's here. Why don't you let him speak? Why don't you let him answer the questions?
Gentleman is not
good. Time after time. If you want the Attorney General to come, at least let him answer the questions and the accusations made against him.
The gentleman's rudeness is not recognized.
Rudeness?
Rudeness is on the other side.
Time after time, you refuse to let the Attorney General of the United States answer the questions posed to him.
Your rudeness is not recognized. Unbelievable. Let's bring in the guy who saw screen right, Jim Jordan, Republican from Ohio, House Judiciary Committee ranking member. Jim, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve.
Can you please explain to me and Ainsley and Brian why the Democrats thought they would like look terrific if they would ask Bill Barr a question and then 4 seconds later cut him off?
There's no explanation. As I said in the hearing yesterday, you've been trying to get the Attorney General here, let the guy talk. But they wouldn't let us complete our video. They wouldn't let him answer questions.
They pulled the plug on the video?
Yeah, it wasn't all the way through. We had more to show. They wouldn't let him answer the questions. And there was a point where they weren't even going to let him take a restroom break. That's how rude they were to the Attorney General of the United States of America, because they've been out to get this guy, as I said in my opening statement, ever since he used the word spying and called it what it was. They've been out to get him so much so they filed articles of impeachment against him 3 weeks ago.
So, Congressman, we know people on other channels that you included in those "these are peaceful protests" were upset that you took them out of context, because if people didn't see the video, if you guys were busy during the day yesterday, you opened up to say, "These are not peaceful protests. I will show you the difference." You talked about the Dorn family, and we saw that them talked about the death of the dad in that family, the husband in that family. At the same time, we saw everything burning. What's your answer to those on other channels who said you took them out of context?
Well, how can you take them out of context when they're at one? They're standing in front of the camera saying it's a peaceful protest.
With a fire.
There's a building burning behind them. It's not a fire. It's just a burning building. And maybe it's a peaceful fire. I mean, it's ridiculous for them to say that. That's why we showed it, because they keep saying peaceful protest. And as the attorney general said, why won't they condemn the mob? Why won't the mainstream press? Why won't Democrats condemn the mob? Why won't they speak out against this crazy defund the police policy that's causing the harm? Three officers went blind, were blinded all this past weekend because of the mob in Portland. So that's what we're concerned about. The attorney general is doing a great job as attorney general. He's doing a great job trying to protect federal property and enforce federal law. Why won't the Democrats help? Why won't they speak out against it and talk about how crazy it is to defund the police?
So Nancy Pelosi, she had this to say. Listen.
So this is, it's really, he was like a blob. He was like a henchman for the President of the United States instead of the Attorney General of the United States of America.
He says that she's saying he's a henchman. And he said yesterday, Barr said yesterday, that the president expects me to exercise my independent judgment to make calls the way I think are to make calls I think are right. And that's exactly what I have done. He said that he insists that he acts independent of the president. Nancy Pelosi is saying he's a henchman and a blob. And there's a double standard there. What if someone called a woman a blob? What's your response? Yeah.
No, it's terrible. But this is the same individual who said that the president of the United States is an imposter back during impeachment. The guy who 63 million Americans voted for, she called an imposter. So I don't take what she says about people in the administration very seriously. Bill Barr, as I said earlier, is doing a good job. He is committed to the rule of law. He said something else yesterday that's so important. He said he is tired of the double standard. The one set of rules for the political elite. If your name is Comey, Clapper, Brennan, you get one set of rules, and then us regular folks get another set. He is tired of that, and that's why Mr. Durham is doing the investigation to find out what happened. So I thought that was another great line that is so consistent with administering the rule of law and having equal justice under the law.
Right. Let's switch gears for just a moment. Big tech, a lot of them, although not Twitter, going up on Capitol Hill today to talk a little bit about, you know, how some in Congress feel that they are censoring certain points of view. Donald Trump Jr.'s Twitter was suspended yesterday for 12 hours after he shared a video about hydroxychloroquine, I do believe. Here he is with Tucker last night talking about Twitter. Watch this.
If they're censoring my account, they're censoring others. When I posted that video, I didn't say, well, this is the gospel. I said, wow, this is a must watch because it seems very contrary to the narrative that they've been force feeding us for a little while. Now, Twitter takes me down for that, but Twitter has no problem saying that coronavirus disinformation spread by the Chinese government does not violate their rules. I just put something out there that challenged the narrative. And because I have a large platform, I'm canceled.
And just like you said a moment ago on the other topic, there's a double standard.
No, there's definitely a double standard. They censor conservatives. Big tech attacks conservatives. We know that's, there's no, we feel that's the case. We think that's the case. That is the case. Those are the facts. I mean, think about this. Twitter allowed a tweet from the leader of Iran, the largest state sponsor of terrorism. In the tweet, he talks about striking a blow against the United States. They allow that, but they censor Don Jr. They censor the president. I mean, this is crazy. So they're going to hear about that today in the hearing. About this double standard. I point out there were four members of Congress shadow banned just 2 years ago.
Yep.
You think about it, 435 in the House, 100 in the Senate, 535, only four, Gates, Meadows, Nunes, Jordan, and they said it was just a glitch. I said, what'd you put in the algorithm? The names Gates, Meadows, Nunes, Jordan. It's not a glitch. If I had a nickel for every time they said the word glitch, We'd have a dollar.
Here's the problem. This is not interesting and fascinating, aggravating. This is going to affect the election. You have Jeff Bezos, Tim Cook, Mark Zuckerberg, and Sanjay Pinchar of Google all going to be in front of you. For Bezos, the first time. This is going to be extraordinary. For Google, they are suppressing conservative writers, and you had Breitbart on saying that they gave this warning a year ago. Bottom line is the average American who's not into politics like us is going to be searching different articles to get perspectives, and they're going to be wondering why you cannot get conservative points of view, right or wrong. That, I know, is wrong.
Yeah, and you're right, Brian, particularly in an election year. We have a number of examples that we will point out today in the hearing that have happened in just the past few months. And here we are 97 days before the election, and the impact they can have on the election process is profound. So that is why this is so important that we that
you got to score points today. You can't talk at each other. You got to score points today.
I think we got to show what's going on and how that could impact the election. I think that's critical.
Congressman, thanks for being with us.
You bet. Thank you
all.
Good luck
today.
We're reclaiming our time.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Yeah, that was quite a backfire on little Jerry Nadler mess up there of that quizzing of Barr. Should have been an inquisition. Why didn't you have your robes on, Jerry Nadler? You'd look better. Look like you were in character then. And, you know, with all the other monks and fathers and the Inquisition, whatever. Anyways, coming up next is a conversation between Joel Skousen and, Alex Jones. And they're covering some of the problems that they see, Trump being reelected. And he does have real problems because, boy, they've got everybody organized against Trump. But anyway, here we go with a really good conversation between Alex Jones and Joel Skousen. Here we go now.
By the way, I agree with you that Trump is losing right now because of fraud, because of mail-in ballots, but and also because he's not on the offense and because of Jared Kushner giving him bad advice. I say that so he'll change course in the next 97 days and hopefully avert this. I'm the guy that told you he was going to win when others weren't, that the polls were fake. I know internal polls show him narrowly ahead. Previous internal polls showed him 10 to 15 points ahead. So this is a serious situation.
But I don't think he can get ahead unless he comes out and attacks this coronavirus as it is, as a false pandemic. It's exaggerated. The testing is the key. It's not valid. It's picking up all coronavirus.
I totally agree. You're saying he's got to head on, destroy Gates, and destroy Fauci.
He's got to attack this because American people, I've been in a hotel today talking to people in Austin, people pulling down their masks and say, this is ridiculous. I can't live this way. There's a underground current of resistance building. They need a leader. They need someone to have the courage to come out and say, the emperor has no clothes. This has got to stop.
Civil war isn't coming. Civil war is here. With 97 days out from the election, the ambient background violence of the communist and globalist organizations are being activated so that the police can be demonized ahead of the overthrow of local governments, the surrounding of the White House, and an attempt to drive the president from office. I've been telling you that that's Soros' plan for the last 3 years from documents we exclusively got from family members. They got high-level Antifa documents of brigades of groups under the command of Alexander Soros. Soros promptly financed more than 50 lawsuits against us when we got these documents and published them. But Soros is just one front guy of the larger system. Now, every major leader of the Democratic Party, Pelosi, Eric Holder, the former attorney general, Maxine Waters, former head of Homeland Security, Governor Ridge, a Republican, now Nadler today confronted the Attorney General Bill Barr and said, you're planning to use troops to stay in office. They've said they're going to contest the election. The Democrats are. Then if Trump contested, which we saw in 2000, Republicans co-contested, they're saying we're going to remove him. And the Washington Post headline said anyone aiding him will be put in prison, including members of his cabinet. So it's clear that that's their next move. COVID to lock things down, race riots to be the cover for the overthrow of the elected government. So you better not oppose the overthrow of the government. You hate black people, then it's 98% white communist activists. So Joel Skousen's going to be here for the next 2 hours and 20 minutes roughly till the end of the broadcast. He's flown here. He's a pilot, former Marine Corps aviator from Vietnam. He's an author. He's one of the top experts on secure homes and real survivalism. He's traveled the entire world. He's up there in the top two or three people and recognized maybe the top survivalist expert for serious survivalism, not so much about the gear, but where to live and how to be prepared and the lifestyle that allows you to do it. I've noticed the right thing to do for a long time, but I've been in pure offense mode trying to stop this. I have to tell you now, folks, that I agree with his analysis that in the long term, we're not going to stop this. We can just mitigate it for ourselves and, try to make sure that this whole system we have to go through, this beast system, is not as painful as it would be. And it's about winning people's hearts and minds spiritually ahead of what's going to be coming down. And so we'll discuss it all in the third and fourth hour today. I'll be co-hosting with Joel Skousen. He has his maps. He has his fourth edition, A Strategic Relocation, out. We also co-made a film together. They're both available at InfoWarsStore.com, and they are absolutely, totally essential. But we've got about 3 minutes to break. We're going to play some of the Attorney General's confrontation with Nadler. I have two crew members watching the hearings. They say now all the Democrats are saying Trump's a dictator. He's illegitimate. He's sending in troops. I mean, this is now their next big move, in my view. Joel Skousen of World Affairs Brief. What is your view?
Well, they certainly don't intend to let Donald Trump get reelected. And that's why part of the reason for extending this COVID-19 phony pandemic extensively is to make sure there's no in-person voting, or at least if it's very limited, to have drive-by voting, have voting by mail, all of which is easily corruptible. With all of the thousands of new voters that they brought in and registered, I think it's very, very unlikely that Donald Trump's going to get elected. And I'll tell you, if the Democrats swing the Senate, and it looks like they may be able to, Joni Ernst is in trouble, Sally is in trouble in Arizona, David Perdue's in trouble in Georgia. If they take the presidency and the Senate and have the House, there's going to be hell to pay in the United States. It's going to be they'll stack the Supreme Court with more justices to overcome whatever minority they have with John Roberts always switching sides for them. We're going to get Green New Deal. We're going to get all kinds of gun control, urban, federal zoning planning. I mean, this is going to be a nightmare. And I don't think we're ever going to recover.
By the way, I agree with you that Trump is losing right now because of fraud, because of mail-in ballots, but and also because he's not on the offense and because of Jared Kushner giving him bad advice. I say that so he'll change course in the next 97 days and hopefully avert this. I'm the guy that told you he was going to win when others weren't, that the polls were fake. I know internal polls show him narrowly ahead. Previous internal polls showed him 10 to 15 points ahead. So this is a serious situation.
But I don't think he can get ahead unless he comes out and attacks this coronavirus as it is, as a false pandemic. It's exaggerated. The testing is the key. It's not valid. It's picking up all coronavirus.
I totally agree. You're saying he's got to head on, destroy Gates, and destroy Fauci.
He's got to attack this because American people, I've been in a hotel today talking to people in Austin, people pulling down their masks and say, this is ridiculous. I can't live this way. There's a underground current of resistance building. They need a leader. They need someone to have the courage to come out and say, the emperor has no clothes. This has got to stop.
Okay, you just said what everybody needs to hear, and it's the truth. And I meant to start the show with that today. So I want you to come back and say that again, and I want to take a clip of what he just said live, guys, put on the front of the whole show when we archive this today for everybody, because Trump has really dropped the ball, and I don't say that with pleasure. He needs to not be on both sides of this. He needs to destroy Fauci, destroy Gates, destroy the United Nations fraud, expose the whole thing. Joel Skousen, editor-in-chief at worldaffairsbrief.com, is our guest. In about 15 minutes into the next hour, we're going to spend an hour and 45 minutes on strategic relocation, on the really safest places to live in the United States, and the different crises and things that are faced, and also other parts of the world. And then hopefully he can take a rest today. Not that he ever needs much. He's a hardworking guy. Maybe shoot an hour uninterrupted later in the studio before he leaves back to where he lives on the West Coast out there, and can just have an hour uninterrupted here to also get into this issue in more depth. But he's here with us now. Obviously, a lot of stuff is breaking. I already planned to play the Attorney General's opening statement. I've got a transcript of it. It was extremely powerful, saying this is all made up. You guys are a witch hunt. You're a coup against the president. You're now attacking me because I won't go along with it. Well, now, Hank Johnson, we're getting the clip right now that said that Guam floats, that islands float on top of water like a raft. He now says that the Attorney General's opening statement sounded like it was written by Alex Jones and Roger Stone. So we'll have some of that opening statement and that exchange coming up. I've got a little bit of an exchange right now between him and Nadler on the big new talking point that Trump's going to lose the election, but then if he challenges it, he's a dictator and must be removed because they're going to challenge it. But Joel, start over with where you think Trump is. Look right into camera four, and what does Trump need to do to not lose? Because I agree with you, right now he's going to lose.
Well, I fear that if Trump doesn't begin to take a strong stand against this corona, this exaggerated pandemic, if he doesn't start to attack the fact that the test is invalid, the test is picking up all coronaviruses, not just COVID-19, the death rate is being exaggerated by assigning death to people who have motorcycle accidents, who have Lou Gehrig's disease, saying they died of COVID. He's got to come on the offensive and attack, because America, there's a seething undercurrent in this country of resistance against this mask mandate, of resistance against sending kids to school with masks. And they were looking for a champion. Someone's got to have the courage to come out and say the emperor has no clothes.
How would the president do that? I mean, he's got all the numbers. They said 2.2, 2.5 million would die. It's 150,000. They used the numbers of people that have died of other things in the COVID column. The Democrats sent people with pneumonias to nursing homes knowing it would create a death number. They've got blood on their hands. They're easy to destroy. And they're blaming him for the pandemic. Why the hell is he doing this?
Well, first of all, there's a net of vetting around the president that refuses to let him see anything that he doesn't get on TV within his own personal quarters. And he watches, you know, Fox News, which won't touch this conspiracy other than Tucker Carlson. At the Capitol Hill, for example, you had over 100 doctors testifying about why this was a false and exaggerated pandemic and all the mistakes that have been made by the establishment. And the media banned it. They wouldn't cover it. They wouldn't show it.
They now have banned the president's tweet putting out the 44-minute news conference.
Yeah.
That's incredible information control. That's like the Soviet Union.
But Donald Trump has got to get someone into the White House who can brief him on this. He lives by briefings. He doesn't do any original research. And so if he doesn't get briefed on it, it's not going to enter his head, except for what he sees on television. And unfortunately, he won't get the full story.
And that's why they've doxed Carlson's house. That's why they're around the clock trying to get him fired, because he listens to Tucker Carlson.
Yeah, but Tucker Carlson, even that, will not go deeply into conspiracy. He knows there are limits to what he can get away with on Fox News, you know, which is a false conservative news source.
Oh, he absolutely does know. I mean, he has been, if he didn't have such giant ratings, he'd already be gone.
But he is a breath of fresh air. He's interviewed people who have defied these orders. He interviewed the gym owner in New Jersey who was arrested for keeping his gym open, for taking the doors off his gym so that they couldn't close him down. They finally arrested him after 144 days of threatening him, and he's still defiant. And
meanwhile, Walmart and all the other big companies, they're essential. Think about the psychology of that. They're essential. Big companies are essential, but little people, little companies that are the most easy to go under. And I know all these small companies have tried to get online, get the stimulus money. They can't get it. Then they get online. They can't get it. We looked at it. It's a big scam. And then Jeff Bezos gets $32 billion.
And there's a lot of innovation that's not happening right now because of the instabilities in the markets. For example, the construction crews are still busy and they're still working because all those contracts were signed and implemented before COVID. But very little new stuff is being signed. So we're looking at a second wave of a depression. When this hits next year, it's not going to be the same year.
Exactly. I have a lot of friends that are in construction, and they said, we're busy now and finishing stuff early because there's nothing new.
That's right. Now, I'm here to tell you, I think, Alex, I've got a gut feeling they never intend to let us free from these pandemics. They never intend to let us free again.
The UN had said that.
And Bill Gates laughed when he was talking in an interview and talking about the next pandemic is really going to get their attention. They planned this one in advance. They knew years in advance. Even Fauci said this administration will face a major pandemic. And now Gates is saying the next one will really get their attention. He's planning it.
That's right. He said the next one, this is just a drill, he said. This is really a test on Colbert. He said the next one will be terrorist and it'll be much worse. And he started grinning like a devil.
Yes, he did. So
what's up with Bill Gates? Why does he celebrate? And like Fareed Zakaria goes, we're never reopening. And Gates goes, that's right. He gets so happy. What is that demonically when he looks so happy?
Well, as you know, and we've talked before in the show, there is a satanic connection in the entire deep state and globalist conspiracy. These things are done by revelation and guidance at the highest level, not to the intermediate yes man, the stupid idiots that Lenin used to call them. But Gates is one of those useful idiots to the to this conspiracy.
So you think he's not even in the inner circle?
No, I don't think so. He's a lightweight. When you look at him mentally, you know, this is not a heavier. Soros is the inner circle. Kissinger was the inner circle. Brzezinski was the inner circle. But not Gates.
I agree. What about the Rothschilds? They're pretty high up.
Yeah, they're very, very high up, Rothschild. And a lot of people get concerned about who is at the actual. It really doesn't matter who's at the top.
Because they're just ringwraiths of Satan.
That's right. We know that this has got satanic direction. That's the only reason it could be going for centuries. I mean, starts clear back in the former centuries, and it keeps going. No single evil person could set this in motion and keep it in motion.
Doesn't the Bible call that the mystery of evil?
Yes, yes. It's got to be revelatory, and it isn't at a high level. I mean, at a low level or immediate level. But they use mostly control aspects for people at the intermediate. They promise them wine, women, and songs, power, money, immunity from prosecution. And that's what we're seeing all across the board with the way that Jeffrey Epstein was covered up for years and the way that Maxwell is being treated, you know, in the courts. This is immunity, and they're going to do it. We're not going to get justice. I don't think Bill Barr, even though he's playing loyal to Trump, is going to let Durham or have Durham ever reveal. It's going to just continue to investigate until after the election, then it'll die because Donald Trump, I predict, will not be reelected.
Well, Joel Stolz in there at the end of that interview is saying he doesn't believe that Trump, under the set these circumstances now, will be reelected. And so they've marshaled so many forces against him right now. And so we've just got to pull, you know, everyone that is a voting age, get out and vote and get other people out there to vote. We've got to really turn out the vote this year. Anyway, here's an interview about Portland. Okay, here we go next.
So let's talk about Portland, because some of the state troopers there locally are moving in because the president has said, if y'all aren't going to guard the courthouse there and federal buildings there, then we're going to send in our troops, our federal troops, to come in and guard that. Now he's saying the National Guard will come in if these state troopers can't do the job. And then he also said that officials will clear out the beehive of terrorists. Listen to the president.
These protesters, and many should be arrested, because these are professional agitators. These are professional anarchists. These are people that hate our country. We're telling them right now that we're coming in very soon. The National Guard, these are not people that just have to guard the courthouse and save it. These are people that are allowed to go forward and do what they have to do. And I think that makes the governor's job and the mayor's job a lot easier. So they're working today and probably tomorrow to clean out this beehive of terrorists. And then slowly we can start to leave the city. If they don't do it, we'll be sending in the National Guard.
So let's bring in Acting DHS Secretary Chad Wolf to find out the latest in Portland. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning. How did it work last night?
It worked fairly well. What we saw is a robust contingent of Oregon State Police come into the area yesterday afternoon. Together with Portland Police Bureau, they cleaned out the parks across the street from the courthouse. And what we saw overnight is almost little to no criminal activity. And that really is how it should be. It reinforces the principle. If you work with federal, state, and local law enforcement, work together, we can protect our communities, we can secure our communities, we can secure federal properties and protect law enforcement officers. And this is what we've been asking for over 60 days. And I'm glad Oregon and Portland has finally stepped up to the challenge.
So the way I understand it, you would know better, there was 100 state troopers there guarding, and you guys were standing by should something go wrong. All you asked Ted Wheeler to do was use his state police to guard federal buildings. When he wouldn't, you had no choice. The mayor makes you the bad guy. And now you sit there. Now that finally the governor saw that you weren't backing down and did what you asked him to do all along. Does that feel good to a degree?
Well, Brian, it certainly reinforces what we have been saying all along, which is we're going to continue to secure that courthouse, that seat of justice in Portland. That's our job. That's our responsibility. And we're not backing away from that. And what we've been asking Portland and Oregon to do is to police city streets, police city parks, do their jobs, and arrest individuals that are committing criminal acts. And finally, after over 60 days, they've decided to step up and do their job. Unfortunately, within those 60 days, we've had over 240 DHS law enforcement officers injured.
Wow.
Because of the criminal and violent activity every night.
And, Mr. Secretary, over those 60 days, you've seen a lot of violence, which has required use of force from people protecting federal property. Well, the mayor there, Mayor Ted Wheeler, he's not staring down those people and locking them up, instead apologizing. Listen.
I apologize to those nonviolent demonstrators who were subjected to the use of CS gas or LRAD. It should never have happened. I take personal responsibility for it, and I'm sorry. I also want to draw a clear distinction between the Portland Police Bureau's use of CS gas and what we're seeing the federal officers use. The federal officers are using CS gas broadly, indiscriminately, and nightly. And that is why it is escalating the behavior we're seeing on the streets rather than de-escalating it.
So are the rules of engagement for federal officers there to use gas broadly on peaceful protesters?
Absolutely not. What the mayor quoted just now is completely inaccurate. I believe he knows it to be inaccurate. But again, he is putting politics over public safety. What we know is there are nonviolent, peaceful protests that occur in Portland, occur around that courthouse every day, and there are no issues. The violent criminal activity that the mayor is, again, not telling you the truth about occurs between midnight and 5 a.m. every morning, and it is violent, violent criminals and other opportunists, violent opportunists that are attacking that courthouse, and that's what we are concerned about. There are no peaceful protesting going on at 3:30 and 4 a.m. in the morning at that courthouse. That occurs earlier in the day, and there are no issues. So the mayor is intentionally confusing issues and, again, playing politics over public safety.
It's just not – if you just think about common sense here. Look, if there are peaceful protests, you don't need tear gas, right? We all agree you can peacefully protest. But it's when it gets violent, and we see all these videos of tons of people going toward, like, 10 or 15 officers that are trying to guard a monument or a courthouse – and I am worried about their safety. And when you have individuals throwing rocks and bottles at them, the police officers in Portland found recently a sledgehammer, gas cans. And so these officers were asking them to go out there. And then what are they supposed to do when these crowds start coming for them? Tear gas is not going to kill you. It's going to keep the violent people away from hurting our police officers. What do you make of this, of the increase of violence?
Well, it's very disappointing. And what we've been doing in Portland, again, is securing a federal property there. And we take a very defensive posture in doing that. But we do have to come out and engage the violent individuals to push them back away from the fence line that we've established there. And again, what we have been saying all along is that these individuals shouldn't be able to congregate in city parks and on city streets to do this violent activity. We've been asking for 60 days for Portland police or Oregon police to do their job. And for whatever reason, it took 60 days. It took my law enforcement officers 245 injuries, over 90 arrests, for them to step up and to do their job. I'm glad they're here. I'm glad they're partnering with us, that we can hopefully bring this to a very peaceful conclusion very quickly.
Mr. Secretary, they were also demonstrating outside your house. They're doing it outside the Nassau County Police Commissioner's house, around the NYPD Commissioner's house. This is the new trend. Go to their house. Even the liberal mayors are getting protested there. So you got to worry about your own security. Now, in the big picture, do the federal troops, agents move out of Portland? And if so, what date? And are you going to leave Seattle as well, as we head to a weekend where they tell you you can't use, legally, the city council said you're not supposed to use a fence?
Well, there in Portland, we are remaining in Portland. So all of our DHS law enforcement officers that have been there over the past 60 days will remain there in Portland until we are assured that the plan that has been put in place by the governor and Oregon State Police will be effective night after night after night. Yesterday or last night was the first night that they have been deployed.
Right.
What we know are the weekends are more violent. So we're going to remain there until we're assured that that courthouse is safe and secure. Other cities like Seattle that you mentioned and others, we have, as we get intelligence and threat information that federal properties are targeted, we send in standby teams of law enforcement personnel. And when that threat passes, we remove those teams. So it's very much like we do every other day of the year with law enforcement around the country.
Mr. Secretary, real quick exit question. What is the threshold by which the National Guard would be deployed? We've heard the president talk about that in Portland.
Sure. Well, I think, again, we've got to see if the Oregon State Police put together an effective plan. And if they don't, and the criminal activity continues there at the courthouse, and the Oregon State Police are overrun, then that's certainly an option that the president has continued to talk about. It's certainly an option that we will look at. But we are looking forward to Oregon State Police and others there, Portland Police, that are now involved in this issue. We hope that they will do their job.
Thank you so much, Chad Wolf, for being with us. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it, sir.